Genesis chapter 41. Genesis 41 is where we'll be tonight. We started in on chapter 41 last week, kind of moving fast through it, and so we'll slow down as we get into it tonight. Backing up into chapter 39, we pick up on Joseph's time in Egypt. Joseph was an integral part of the success of Egypt. From the time he got there, God began to bless Egypt through Joseph. And everybody recognized that. And we see that beginning with his work in the household of Potiphar. Potiphar recognized that everything Joseph did was blessed by God. Everything Joseph did turned out well. And so he rose in the ranks. He was over everything in Potiphar's house except the food that Potiphar would eat. Now, let's remember, though, that this wasn't a good situation for Joseph. He was still a slave. He had been abused by his brothers. He had been thrown into a pit. He had been drug up out of that pit and sold into slavery. And so this isn't a great situation for a person to live in as a slave, but he was making the best of this bad situation. And as the Scriptures tell us, beginning in verse 1 of chapter 39, verse 2 rather, the Lord was with Joseph. And we continue to see that pattern. And we've talked about how throughout the life of Joseph, we see the hand of God. We see the providence of God working through his life. Egypt was blessed with Joseph being in their nation. Now, in Potiphar's house, as we continue through chapter 39, we find Joseph is placed with a temptation. He's faced with this, a very real temptation. He had an opportunity to enter into a sexual relationship with his master's wife. Now, obviously that's never a good idea, right? And Joseph saw it as not a good idea, but he didn't see it as sinning against his master, Potiphar. He didn't see it as sinning against Potiphar's wife. He didn't see it as a disgrace to his family name. What did he see it as? A sin against God. How can I do this great evil against my God? And so he recognized, and if we look at sin, that if we look at temptation that way, shouldn't that make it easier for us to overcome? Understanding all that God has done for us, understanding the blessings that He provides for us, understanding that we as His people, He's with us. If we think about, we're faced with a temptation. If I sin, I'm not just putting myself up for the possibility of some embarrassment of myself or embarrassment of my family or I might hurt this other person. That's not, now those are real things, right? Those are things we can consider. But ultimately, we need to recognize that any sin that we commit is a sin against God. Joseph recognized that. It helped him overcome temptation. So we would do well to do the same. Now, we'd like to think that if we always do the right thing, things always work out well for us. But we know the reality of our own lives, that's not the case. Sometimes bad things happen to good people. Sometimes good things happen to bad people. And maybe there's a little bit of injustice in the world that we see. Certainly there was injustice in the life of Joseph. He withstood this temptation. He refused Potiphar's wife's advances toward him. And he still wound up in jail because she lied about it. He wound up in jail. Where was God, right? Where was God when this great injustice was served to Joseph for doing what God would have him to do? I'll tell you where he was. He was with Joseph. The Lord was with Joseph, even through this injustice. Now, we need to understand that we're going to be treated unfairly by the world. Sometimes if we take a stand for what's right, if we take a stand for our faith, if we take a stand for God, people are going to treat us unfairly. We're going to deal with some injustices. And so we have to do like Joseph. We have to learn to wait. We have to learn to practice patience. Joseph had this dream years ago, right? That all these people were going to be bowing down to him. Well, when's that going to happen? How's that going to happen in jail? Well, once again, in jail, we find the Lord with him as he rises in the ranks of the jail. He's over all the prisoners. And that situation puts him in contact with two men we talked about last week in chapter 40. A cupbearer to Pharaoh and a baker for Pharaoh. Joseph spent time with these men. Joseph developed a relationship with these men. And these two men had dreams. And they didn't know what they meant. And Joseph, upon hearing the dreams, he knew what they meant. And he explained to them. One was a very favorable report. The cupbearer would be restored to his position in 3 days. The baker, on the other hand, didn't get such a favorable report. He would be hung or hanged. What's the appropriate way to say that? English teacher, hanged. He would be hanged in 3 days by Pharaoh, not restored to his position. The cupbearer, obviously pleased with his report. Joseph had one request. Remember me. Remember me when you're back with Pharaoh. Verse 22 of chapter 40, or 23. The chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. How frustrating would that be if you're in Joseph's position? You should have never been a slave, right? Your brothers shouldn't have kidnapped you and sold you into slavery. You were the favorite son. You were the preferred child at home. And then you became a slave. You made the best of it, right? And you rose through the ranks. And then you should have never been in jail. Even though, yeah, you wound up as a slave, but you should have never gone to jail. But you go to jail. You make the best of that situation. You rise through the ranks. And now, perhaps this is your opportunity to get out. You're a dream interpreter. To people who are very close to Pharaoh. But the person who you foretold getting out of jail in 3 days, and the other person was going to be killed. Well, this person who lived and returned to his position forgets all about you. And we know how long he forgot about him as we move into chapter 41. 2 whole years. I don't know the significance of having the word whole in there. Would it change much if it just said after 2 years? I don't know, but 2 whole years. I don't know if that puts it back around to Pharaoh's birthday, if that's significant, because this was Pharaoh's birthday, right, where these two men are released, and he has this big ordeal. We talked about it a little bit last week, where one is restored to his position, the other one's hanged. So maybe that's the significance of saying 2 whole years to put us back about the same time frame on the calendar. But after two whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile, and behold, there came up out of the Nile seven cows, attractive and plump, and they fed in the reed grass. Behold, seven other cows, ugly and thin, came up out of the Nile after them, stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile, and the ugly, thin cows ate up the seven attractive, plump cows. And Pharaoh awoke, and he fell asleep and dreamed a second time. And behold, seven ears of grain, plump and good, were growing on one stalk. And behold, after them sprouted seven ears, thin and blighted by the east wind. And the thin ears swallowed up the seven plump, full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. So in the morning his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was none who could interpret them to Pharaoh. As we started in on this chapter last week, we mentioned, if you ever doubt the providence of God, if you ever doubt that God works in the lives of His people, read Genesis chapter 41, because we see it so clearly, God working. And the first way He works is by giving these two dreams to Pharaoh. I forgot to pass these out. I've been talking for over 10 minutes and nobody else has said a word. Nobody's reaching for a microphone either. Thank you, BJ. You want it?
Sure.
Otis said he'd take it. So, God sends Pharaoh these two dreams. And we talked about last week how, you know, we hear these dreams, just like the dreams of the cupbearer and the baker. It's hard to really put together what these dreams might mean. Now we know what they mean because we've read the chapter and we've read the following chapters and we've seen them come to pass. But put ourselves in Pharaoh's position. Put ourselves in his dream interpreter's position. Put ourselves even in Joseph's position. How can you know what these dreams mean? Pharaoh didn't know. His interpreters didn't know. Why wouldn't they know? Okay. They couldn't know because that wasn't God's plan. Joseph has been waiting, right? He's been waiting all these years for that dream that he had when he was 17 years old, or those two dreams he had when he was 17 years old, to come true. And we're getting closer. Bill. That's right. That's right. That's what we'll see him say that when he gets in the presence of Pharaoh, that this is God's. It's not about Joseph. It's about God and what God can do, what God will do. But he's been waiting, and now it's time for God. God has prepared him through all of these things. He's had positions of some authority in smaller scale things, and now it's time for him to have large scale authority and really make an impact and get those brothers to bow down to him, right? That's ultimately the dream that has to come true for Joseph. Pharaoh can't make sense of his dreams. No one can make sense of his dreams. Verse 9. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "I remember my offenses today." Two whole years later, "I remember my offenses today. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me and the chief baker in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, we dreamed on the same night, he and I, each having a dream with its own interpretation. A young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. When we told him, he interpreted our dreams to us, giving an interpretation to each man according to his dream. And as he interpreted to us, so it came about. I was restored to my office, and the baker was hanged. Why 2 whole years later? Because that's God's timing. That's God working. God doesn't work on our time schedule. As much as we might want Him to, He works on His schedule. If God makes us a promise, He's going to keep that promise. If God makes us a promise today, He's going to keep that promise. It may not happen tomorrow. It may not happen in 3 days. It may not even happen in 2 whole years. But it will happen. God keeps His promise. God works on His schedule. And so now, when it's time, God brings Joseph to the mind of the cupbearer. Verse 14. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. When he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I've had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I've heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Doesn't make you feel pretty good, right? People are speaking well of Joseph. People are talking about this great ability that he has. And it is a great ability, right? To be able to interpret dreams. And so Joseph, he could have taken great pride in that and said, yes, that's me. I'm the guy who can interpret any dream. Maybe he could have seen that as his way out. And it would have been an attempt for him to make his own way out. But that's not how he saw it. That's not what he said. Verse 16, Joseph answered Pharaoh, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Then starting in verse 17 through verse 24, he recounts the dreams. We're not going to read them again. He recounts them just as we read them before, the cows and the corn. And down in verse 25, Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. So yes, there were two separate dreams, back to back, on the same night, but they mean the same thing. And Joseph will explain to Pharaoh why he got two instead of just the one in just a minute. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Did Pharaoh believe in God? Okay, he didn't believe in God. That is true. He did not believe in God. Joseph says, God will interpret this dream for you. God will give you the answer. And then he says, God has shown you what He's about to do. Joseph didn't say, this is something that might happen. Joseph didn't offer this up to chance. He didn't say, God is thinking about doing these things. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years. The 7 good ears are 7 years. 7 lean and 7 ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years. The 7 empty... ears blighted by the east wind are also 7 years of famine. It is as I told Pharaoh, God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. Joseph is really driving home the point of where the dreams came from and that these dreams are going to happen. Whatever these dreams mean, or this is what God is going to do. It's not climate change. It's not shift in weather patterns. It's not an ice age or a heat wave. God is going to do this, is what Joseph is saying. Verse 29, there will come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt, but after them will arise 7 years of famine, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. The famine will consume the land, and the plenty will be known in the land by reason of the famine that will follow, for it will be severe. And the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that the thing is fixed by God. God is not going to change his mind about this. The doubling of the dream means that the thing is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it about. Not only is this surely going to happen, it's going to happen soon. So there's the interpretation of the dreams. Now what? Right? And that, if you're Pharaoh and you hear this, remember, you don't believe in God, but you have this man who correctly interpreted the dreams of two men who were very close to you. One had died by your hand 2 years earlier. So you remember this, right? You remember this happening because it happened on your birthday. So maybe you're starting to think, well, this Joseph, he might be on to something. This God he talks about, maybe there's something to these dreams. And so you're Pharaoh. What's next? Who do you listen to? Okay, the one who has a good track record, Kathy said. That makes sense, right? You got all these advisors around you. None of them have any idea about these dreams that you've had, that you've shared with them. This guy comes in, and he's got some ideas. He's got an idea. He's got the answer to your dream. God has revealed to Pharaoh what's going to happen over the course of the next 14 years. Would you like some information like that? If you could get some information like that from a sure source, a trustworthy source, what would you do? You would want to get things in order. That's right. And that's what he did. Now that Pharaoh knew God's plan, I believe he realized that he needed to do what God wanted him to do. And his only connection to God was this young Hebrew that he just pulled out of the jail, just shaved him up, just put on new clothes. That's his only connection to God, who said, this is what's going to happen. And so Joseph, it seems, takes advantage of this situation. Starting in verse 33. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt during the 7 plentiful years. And let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities. And let them keep it. That food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that they are to occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through famine. Joseph gives Pharaoh some suggestions. First suggestion, find a smart guy. Right? Find a smart guy. Let me look for the words he uses. A discerning and wise man. Do you think Joseph had himself in mind as he's describing this person?
I don't.
I don't know. It's hard to tell, right? Now, Joseph, it doesn't seem, has ever presented himself as a proud person. I believe Joseph's intent or Joseph's thought was God will lead Pharaoh to select the right person. And maybe he thought of himself as possibly that guy, but not necessarily. Joseph was giving it to God. But Pharaoh, number one, appoint a discerning and wise man to oversee the land and all the harvest. Number two, appoint some commissioners, some deputies, some people to work under this intelligent and wise person to be over different parts of the land and make sure that they were collecting one-fifth of all the harvest for the next 7 years. And then all of that was collected would be put in storage in the various cities of Pharaoh. Now, Chris and I were talking after class last week. You save one-fifth of a crop for 7 years, and how much crop do you have? How much of an annual crop do you have? Seven-fifths, right? You have one full year plus two-fifths of another year. How's that going to last seven? Well, here's the conclusion I came to. It's not, God didn't tell Pharaoh in his dream, you're going to have 7 normal years and 7 years of famine. 7 years of plenty. And so I gather the crop was so great that it only took one-fifth to make a normal year, plus some, plus enough to sell to everybody else, right? Over the course of the next 7 years. That's how great these first 7 years were going to be. Has our nation ever experienced anything like that? A time of great wealth and great prosperity, and things are just going great, and people are spending and spending and spending and just overspending and overspending and overspending, and then something happens, and you forget about how good things were because it's so miserable now. I think about, I guess it was the early 2000s when the housing bubble first burst. All the subprime lenders. And you had these people who bought $100,000 houses for $300,000 and then charged up $60,000 or $70,000 worth of furniture to put inside of it. Then the bubble burst. And they owed $300,000 on a house that was worth $100,000. Ouch, right? We know what it's like to have times of plenty and then be faced with times where we're lacking.
Another perfect example, the Roaring Twenties, sure. And the Great Depression.
That was before my time, Kathy.
I'm not familiar with that. I heard about it.
Yes, yes, I've heard about it.
They just lose their homes. They starved. They starved.
I got firsthand knowledge from my parents on it. I'm a child of the 60s, so I grew up on the stories of what they did during, they grew up during the 20s, but they came into adulthood in the 30s during the Great Depression.
Sure. And it certainly was a terrible, terrible time. Now, but the 20s were great, right, Butch? I always default to Butch. He's not that old. I know. Right. Is there a principle that we can take during good times to put back a little bit, right? And for when hard times do come. Let's see, where are we? We're in verse 37. So Joseph makes these suggestions. Appoint a guy, smart guy. Appoint some people to oversee things under him. Take 1/5 of everything that's harvested and put it in the cities of Pharaoh. Verse 37. This proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And it's a pretty wise proposal, right? And do you think any of his servants might have thought they were going to be that intelligent guy, that wise and discerning person? Probably. They probably began jockeying for a position. Pharaoh said to his servants, though, can we find a man like this? Do you think Pharaoh thought it would be one of his servants? Nope. You don't ask that question to somebody if you think the guy is in that group, right? Go ahead, Linda.
He says it in the next line, one who's in the Spirit of God.
In whom is the Spirit of God?
There was no other people in the Spirit of God except Joseph.
That's right. And isn't that amazing, though? You know, we read about people like Elijah, who went off and hid in a cave, thinking he was the only one who wasn't worshiping idols. And we learn that he was not the only one who had not worshiped idols. There were 7,000 more, according to God. But in Egypt, there was one person who believed in God. One. And he impacted the entire nation. And really, ultimately, as we move into chapters 42 and 43, the whole world. One person. And so if we ever think that we can't do any, we can't do it on our own, right? But Joseph had a not-so-secret partner. The Lord was with Joseph. And so Joseph wasn't by himself, but Joseph impacted the entire world. Can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God? And Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all of this, there is none so discerning and as wise as you are. Now, things might be clicking for Joseph. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards to the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and clothed him in garments of fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck. He made him ride in the second chariot, and called out before him, bow the knee. bow the knee. Interesting, right? Let's see. I lost my place. Thus he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no one shall lift up hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. Joseph had the power to say, walk or don't walk. Raise your hand, put your hand down over anybody but Pharaoh. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah. And he gave him in marriage to Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over the land of Egypt. Joseph came out pretty good, didn't he? What a lucky guy. Now, we've talked some about luck over the past few weeks. Luck has had nothing to do with what's happened in Joseph's life. Not a single bit of this was luck. It was all God's plan. Joseph is promoted to second in command, second only to Pharaoh. He's got a new name. He's got his own chariot with men going before him saying, bow down to Joseph. Ring, robe, gold chain, and a wife. Did anybody look up the name that he was given? Zaphnath-Paneah.
Dream interpreter?
Dream interpreter is what some have said. Abundance of life. God speaks and he lives. The man who knows things. People aren't settled on what that name might actually mean. And we don't have to know what it means because guess what? Pharaoh doesn't even call him that after he gives him that name. He continues to call him Joseph. I just thought that was interesting to give him an Egyptian name. Now, what about the wife? What about his wife? Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On. A priest in Egypt. What was a priest in Egypt? A priest of a foreign god. Joseph served the one true God. He's marrying a woman whose father promoted and professed a false God. How's that relationship going to work? Now, let's say you're Asenath. And you've lived for however old she is, you've lived for that many years watching your father and watching his God do nothing. Right? And now you're given in marriage to this man who serves a different God. And you're about to see 14 years of that God do something. She's already seen it, sure.
Because he prophesied correctly, or gave the meaning.
So perhaps this was an opportunity for Joseph to begin some evangelism, right? Personal evangelism, even in his home. Now, we know that they have children. We don't have enough time to read that much. But they had Ephraim and Manasseh. Ephraim and Manasseh were two tribes of Israel. And so there was some, he had influence over his children, if not his wife. And I tend to believe he had some influence over his wife. Next week we'll finish chapter 41. No, next week we'll have our VBS. What do we call that? What do we call that night of VBS? Our Wednesday night VBS meeting. And then the following week, we will we'll finish chapter 41 and move into chapter 42. Thanks for your attention and comments tonight.